From Bright Umbrella, this is Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're talking about SVGs with Brenda Storer. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is brought to you by Mithra 62's Backup Pro, a complete backup solution for WordPress, Expression Engine 2 and 3, Craft, PrestaShop, and Concrete 5. We use this one ourselves for some of our client sites. It's insanely customizable and includes automated backup integrity, 8 built-in storage locations, console routing. Basically, Backup Pro is built to make disaster recovery as painless as possible. Just visit backup-pro.com to get started.
Today, we're diving into the rabbit hole that is images for the web with a primer about SVGs, aka scalable vector graphics. Guiding us on this journey is Brenda Storer. Brenda is a designer and front-end developer working at Thoughtbot, as well as an HTML CSS teacher with Girl Develop It. Welcome to the show, Brenda.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me to come on.
Oh, excited to have you.
Oh, absolutely. Can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Yeah, I live in New York City. I'm originally from the Silicon Valley, but I decided that I didn't want to be in tech, so I moved to New York City, and then I became a developer. But it took about 10 years, so.
And I mentioned in your intro, you teach with Girl Develop It. What's that like?
It's really great. I actually owe Girl Develop It a lot because they're pretty much the reason why I got into technology. I was a designer. I had a graphic design background, and was starting to look for work really in the first, in the market crash around 2008, 2009. And I found the only jobs that I could get with my foot in the door was with just this little bit of HTML knowledge that I had. So I started to look for places to develop, more skills to get better jobs. And Girl Develop It was just starting in New York City and just started taking a bunch of classes there and just loved my teachers and went to everything they did. And eventually one of the co-founders, Sarah Chips, hired me at a startup she was CTO at and gave me my first kind of break.
Exciting.
So it's been great to be able to participate back and be a teacher. And I learn way more by teaching than I ever expected
mm-hmm.
to.
Mm-hmm. For me, myself, when I taught in the university back in the city I lived in Canada, I remember it was actually an interesting struggle to convey the thoughts mm-hmm. I knew so simply, to the point where I did end up memorizing everything because, Google is our friend, but because you're teaching something, you have to end up kind of really, really understanding the core of the concepts that you're trying to explain. And so I think through that process, you just end up learning more about what you're doing and why.
Yeah, definitely. I remember particularly I was going to teach pseudo classes mm-hmm. in CSS. Right. And I thought, I know pseudo classes. And then I thought, wait, I have no idea how to describe nth of type.
Right.
Whenever I have to use nth of type, what do? I just kind of plug in numbers until I get the effect I would want.
Right.
Right. So.
Brenda, you were telling us before we started the recording that you're getting started with a new podcast yourself?
Yes. So I work at Thoughtbot, which is a consultancy, and we're known a lot in the Ruby on Rails community specifically, mm-hmm. although that's not all we do. But we have a few podcasts, and we're actually just a very cool company that really just encourages anybody to do what they feel like. So I had done a couple of guest stints on Giant Robots podcast, which is our main podcast. And then one of my colleagues, Lila, who's in our San Francisco office, had also sometimes would join one of our other podcasts, The Bike Shed. So she approached me to see if I wanted to do a podcast with her together. So we're going to hopefully be launching in the next couple weeks and the next month. And we've recorded a pilot and our first episode. So we kind of let the working title remain the title. It's The Lila and Brenda Show.
Nice.
But it's pretty much a tech podcast interview format is what we're going for. So as I was telling you too in the pre-show, I'm excited to learn from you because you both have been so professional in how this has been set up. And I've enjoyed listening to, I've listened to some of your podcasts. I listened to you on Shop Talk Show last year. So yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
We try.
Well, especially from a guest too, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. So enough about us. Let's get into SVGs. Let's start with the basics. So Brenda, what are scalable vector graphics? What's different from other formats like a PNG, JPEG, or GIF?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing to understand at the base is the difference between a vector graphic and a bitmap. So an SVG is a scalable vector graphic, and a vector, well, start with bitmaps are more common, which would be a PNG, a JPEG. And that's, a bitmap is made by little bits, little pixels of color that, you know, once, you know, at a high resolution, make an image together, right? So when these little bits of color come together, you can't tell that they're there, right? You know, whenever you zoom in on a picture, you see all these little squares, right? Mm-hmm. So a vector image is different where it is a mathematical drawing. So it doesn't rely on pixels. It actually is, you know, straight lines. And so in that case, what makes it different is that it is infinitely scalable, which is what has made vector graphics pretty darn important in the web today with so many different screen sizes and retina displays. It can, if it's the right type of image that you want to display and you can do it in a vector way, it can save you a lot on the web. So I think that's kind of where SVGs got, because they've been around forever, but nobody's been using them until like the past couple of years.
What were people using them before the web? I mean, why did they exist to start with? Was it for the web?
Yeah, I mean, actually, so the history is that in the 90s, Macromedia and Microsoft were inventing a format for vector graphics. Basically, they were trying to make a like code version of to display graphical information. And then Adobe and Sun Microsystems were also trying to do the same thing. And they were making competing formats. And the W3C stepped in and developed SVG in 1998.
Oh, really? And then, that long ago? I'm actually surprised.
It gets worse. So then, because the version that SVG is now is version 1.1, which I think is 2001 is when it was introduced.
Wow.
So they're real, and that's what we've got right now. So
wow.
I kind of always say that I think one of the things that kind of drew me to SVG land was because it felt like playing with HTML in the early days, because it's kind of quirky and I don't know, I guess I like it when things are difficult. But actually, they've been working on SVG2. And I've heard from somebody on the W3C working group for SVG that it should be out in 2016. So it should be out this year. But it really is mostly a lot of bug fixes, but possibly some other stuff, which I'll, if we get into it, I'll mention because it's kind of technical, about technical things, like being able to do things in CSS that we can't do now with SVG, which would be really exciting. And getting rid of a lot of the, what I like to call gobbledygook, that isn't necessary in the files anymore.
So you mentioned when you were describing what SVGs are, that they help with being infinitely scalable, which is useful as we're dealing in a multi-device world. Are there any other benefits of SVGs other than this scalability that makes them, quote unquote, better for the web than the options we've been working with before?
Yeah, I mean, they're code, which is the coolest thing. So they also are oftentimes smaller in file size because they are just code. They are an XML document, just like HTML is an XML document. And so one of the features of XML documents is that they can be nested inside of each other. Mm-hmm. So that's why we can inline SVGs in our HTML code. the biggest power of SVGs is that we can manipulate them with code, and we can create, well, we can animate SVGs mm-hmm. with JavaScript and CSS. And then also then you can use something like the JavaScript library D3 and just use data and JavaScript to create complex graphs of information visually.
Right.
So super, super powerful.
So then what are the cons?
Well, you know, every image is different. There's different use cases for everything. Also, I mean, SVGs can use, like, you can put bitmap images inside of them.
Okay.
I think the way to think about them is that they are a, like, HTML is a document for content, right? Mm-hmm. And an SVG is really a document for visual information. So whereas a lot of times we like to think of HTML as content and CSS as presentation, SVG was meant to have presentation as well. Mm-hmm. So it has a lot of the same elements that you get in HTML. Like if you open an SVG document and look at the code, it looks really familiar because it's got that same XML structure mm-hmm. that we know from HTML. But we'll get some other elements in there, like rectangle is an element, circle, path, you know, these things that are meant to be visual. And so we also have attributes on those elements like fill, which is the color of that mm-hmm. shape, or stroke. I mean, these are things you could do in HTML, but that you're discouraged to do kind of nowadays because we try and keep things separate. Mm-hmm. But they're baked into SVG, but you can also do them in CSS on your SVG if you're inlining your SVG too, which makes it cool. But I think to get back to your original question, I think the simplest way to look at bitmap versus vector is if it's a picture, like if it's a photograph, it's probably better as a JPEG.
Mm, right.
It's probably better as a bitmap. But if it's a logo and has like simple, sharp, crisp edges, it's probably better as a vector, as an SVG.
Is that because SVGs are, I mean, I'm not a graphic designer, so I'm not sure the terms, but it's like it's too harsh, like it doesn't have softness capabilities?
No, because I mean, technically, you could have an SVG that was, let's say you had the same image, but it's not inserting a bitmap image into your SVG. It's an SVG rendering of a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
So it has all the little vector points. That is going to be a lot of data. So that file size is probably going to be a lot bigger than your image.
I see.
So I think a lot of times, like, and I've been doing design, either graphic design or web design for like over 10 years. And even so, I'll often think something's going to be, oh, this should be a PNG. And then I'll be like, oh, wait, you know, actually, it's smaller as a JPEG and it looks good. Like, I'm always futzing around mm-hmm. to find what's a smaller file size and how things, if things look better. And so SVG isn't always the answer, but I primarily use it for icons and, yeah, really icons and logos on the websites that I work on.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of, I guess, kind of drawing along the same theme of cons, like what's the browser device support like?
It's actually way better than you probably think. I mean, everything depends on what your website needs are, who you are supporting. But IE9 and up supports SVG. All the Chromes, all the Safaris, all the Androids. But, you know, Microsoft isn't even supporting IE10 or below, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And nobody uses IE10. Like, it doesn't even show up anymore because it's kind of like, I think it's like the in-between where, like, some people are stuck on IE9 because it was the last Windows mm-hmm. Vista or something, you know?
Right.
That they couldn't upgrade. But everybody who had Windows 7 is at least on, like, IE11. So mm-hmm. IE10 is just like, I don't know if you ever noticed, but all my websites, it's just minuscule market share. I don't even think it shows up on caniuse.com even as a metric point anymore. Actually, I know because I just looked up to make sure that I had the latest before I came and talked to you. But yeah, so, and that goes for inlining SVG as well. So when I say inlining SVG, I'm saying you insert the code like into your HTML page of the SVG. Mm-hmm. But you can also just use SVG like a JPEG or a PNG with an image tag or as a background image. And there's some other ways too, as an object. There's an object tag. And that's absolutely totally fine. And I think I would even recommend it if you don't have to manipulate that SVG, because you'll still get the benefits of the infinite scalability. Mm-hmm. You only really need to put it in line if you are going to manipulate it with CSS or JavaScript.
But I don't want to go too far into that just yet. But I mean, am I hearing you say that if you just called an image tag calling an SVG file, you wouldn't be able to manipulate that with CSS or JavaScript? You'd actually have to put the code in line instead of that tag?
There are complicated ways to do it, but basically, yes.
Okay. Okay.
Basically, yes. The ways to do it, I think, aren't worth it, especially since the support is the same basically in browsers for inlining SVG or just using it as an image. Mm. If you want to manipulate it, just inline it. And then anything you write in any CSS file anywhere or JavaScript file anywhere, it's in your DOM, you can manipulate it. But if you import it through an image tag, then you have to, inside the SVG itself, link to the path of the CSS file that you want to manipulate.
Right.
It gets complicated. And also the language isn't the same as with HTML. So it's just not worth it.
All right, let's talk about some of these detailed use cases, and we can get into that one in a second. I do want to mention, though, you were implementing this. We've talked about how good the browser device support is right now. But is there a fallback approach that you rely on? Does it vary?
Yeah, I mean, one thing, I'm fortunate, we pretty strictly here don't have to work. We're usually working on greenfield projects, so we usually don't have to worry about really old browsers. Mm-hmm. So, but when I didn't, if I do, like I said, again, like I would only inline an SVG if I wanted to manipulate it. But I think one of the easiest ways, if there's a bunch of ways, there's actually a really great article, and I'll send you the link on CSS Tricks, that's just very much of like all the fallbacks.
Okay.
And all the different use cases for SVG. But I find the easiest one is if you use an SVG as a background image, you can just use the cascade the way it's supposed to be. So just put the ping as the first background image, and then the SVG is the next background image below it. And so then the browsers that don't support SVG will just not understand that background image and fall back to the previously declared one. And it's usually a PNG that will be your fallback, because a PNG is better at sharper edges. So it usually PNG is a smaller file size for bitmap images that are good SVG images. I did actually come into a really strange fallback use case not too long ago where one of my colleagues runs an Emacs meetup. Do you know what Emacs
yeah,
is?
Yeah, the text editor.
It's like the ancient text editor that has a very like loyal following, but it's like this text editor that's like a whole interface. Like you can do anything in Emacs, and the people who use it like just basically have their Emacs window open, and there's like Slack in one little corner, and you know, the internet in one other little corner in the web. Like they just, you know, it's like their whole screen. So I redesigned the website for the Emacs New York City meetup, and I made their logo into an SVG. And I got feedback that the logo isn't rendering in the Emacs browser. I'm like, of course it's not rendering in the Emacs browser. So I made a PNG fallback, and then I added Modernizer to detect only if inline SVG was there or not. But then I ran into the problem that the Emacs browser also doesn't support JavaScript.
Oh, lovely.
Because it's just like, you know, it's just text. So what I have to do now is I'm just going to reverse the logic. So the default is the PNG. And then if your browser supports SVG, it will show the SVG.
Right. So more progressive enhancement versus graceful degradation.
Interesting. I kind of want to take a step back, since you kind of mentioned, oh, we use SVGs for logos and icons, those types of things. And then you kind of also mentioned, well, a simple rule is photos, etc., bitmaps, JPEG, ping, that kind of stuff. And then if it's going to be a logo or icon, do that for an SVG. Now, there's seems to be a debate going on regarding one other factor, which is icon fonts versus SVGs. Do you have any idea over when you choose to use SVGs for icons versus why not just use an icon font, considering fonts are kind of by default universally accepted everywhere? And there's usually repositories that you can just pull from, et cetera, and so forth. What, like, how would you choose? And why would you choose that?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, it depends on the project. I personally would go more towards SVGs because that's usually probably I like to customize my icons. Mm-hmm. When I was using icon fonts, I was using Intypo a lot.
Right.
And I just hated their Pinterest icon. Like, I'd use the socials and they all looked great, but the Pinterest one just wasn't right. So I started to use the same little SVGs instead in projects so then I could customize them. Mm-hmm. But I think it goes with what your project is. Like, if you're already loading fonts, it might just be easier to load an icon font. I do find that icon fonts have their own bugs and troubles.
Sure.
You know, like, especially when it comes to leading, and there can be weird spacing issues and sometimes require a little more markup if they're like sitting next to other text and things like that. So I would just like look at it at the whole big project and what, if there's an icon font out there that is solving your problems, then that might be worth it. Or if you really only have a couple of icons, or you really want to be able to customize them, or you want to be able to manipulate them more than just changing their hover color, then you may want to use an SVG. I mean, that's another thing. If you're inlining, like, this would be an advantage for font icons, is that you can treat them like text, so you can change their hover color super easily, right?
Right.
But an SVG, you can't do that unless it's inlined, mm-hmm. and then you can change its fill color.
Right. And I also want to point out, like, there's a client-facing advantage over icon fonts versus SVGs. And that's if your client's the type that likes to keep switching images to use inline for their own icons or for their own thing. For example, if we're using something like Font Awesome and they want to switch a different type of font, I mean, font icon, then they just need to choose the class and change it themselves without having to call us, without having to open up an SVG and redoing the image manually. If there is that type of client requirement, some clients do. They like that kind of customization.
In addition to what you were describing, Leah, there's even add-ons for some of the CMSs out there that the client doesn't even have to look up the class. They just can visually pick an option, and then there's a field type that lets them pick the icon they want that they can switch out.
Yeah, and that just makes things really, really easy.
Yeah, that would be hard in SVG land.
Yeah, they would be calling you. It would be the situation where they would be needing graphic support as opposed to just being able to maintain something themselves. So it is. It's totally about the project.
Yeah. What do you normally do? Do you normally like to use SVGs? Do you like to use icon fonts?
I think historically we've been more icon fonts, but are moving more towards SVGs, but it's totally project-based. The Font Awesome and the ability for us to make it easy for the clients to change that stuff makes that a top option for us. But as we get into more projects with clients who are also trying to optimize performance on their sites, mm-hmm. you know, not calling the Font Awesome library not only reduces, like, eliminates one HTTP request, but it also reduces the size of that full library. So some clients, we recommend that they pick and choose the icons they're using regularly from Font Awesome, and we create like a custom font file for them that's not the entire library, but allows them to change the classes as they need from a select group. But we've just picked up a client who has all, it's a, from someone else, like, what is that called?
Inherited.
Like an inherited site where it's a ton of SVG icons, and it's, for when it was created, it probably made a lot of sense. And right now it's so extrapolated to an nth degree that's almost hard to put the pieces together of how the whole thing was created and maintained. And so I can see there are some problems to also just how you implement SVGs and maintain the files. And if you're using some sort of build automation tool to create an SVG from an icon that you upload yourself, and there's all these other things built in. So I can see it getting complicated, but we're trying to use them a little bit more and more. But again, project-based.
I'm a little bit curious also about the implementation, because I know, for example, the old school way, you would create a giant sprite and you just call one PNG that has all the icons in it. Can you create a sprite with an SVG, or would you create an SVG file for every single icon?
You can totally create a sprite with SVG. And actually, there's a really cool way to go about it where you can make one SVG file. So there's, it's not in the head, but in the head, like if you think of HTML, you have, you know, your head element before your body. There's an area called defs, which is an element, D-E-F-S, in SVG. And this is one way to do it. You can put all of the shapes of the different icons that you want. Like, let's say you have 4 social media icons, Twitter icon, Facebook icon. You can just put them in that defs element and then load that SVG inline on your site and just display none it. And then inside of your HTML document, anywhere on your site, you can just call that SVG by like class name or something like that, and it'll load it.
So it's not based on position, which is the old school sprite. It actually is named.
Yeah, it's actually just...
That makes it easier.
Isn't that cool? But you could also do it the old school way as well. I guess it's interesting because each little icon is still a callback, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I also, off the time, but not if it's all loaded in that one file, but I've also done... I most often work on applications. So there's a gem for Ruby on Rails that's inline SVG, and you basically have a SVG folder in your images or in your assets.
Right.
And it's in your asset pipeline, and then you can just inline SVG, so you can just keep them in there. I've also done it where, I mean, since it's just code, sometimes in my views folder, you know, where all my templates are for HTML, I'll just make a new folder that's SVGs and just render a partial of that SVG inline anytime I needed to use it as well. But again, that would be loading all of that code over and over. So if it's something really complicated and how big the file is, like oftentimes if it's a logo, and there's ways to... You know, once you kind of understand what the shapes are, there's many ways to draw a shape in an SVG, and some ways are going to be less big than others.
Right.
And, you know, most of the times, I mean, I'm not hand coding SVGs. Like, I've done it for fun to try and understand them, but I'm not hand coding cubic Bezier curves, you know, because I can see it in my head and I know what the numbers are.
Let's talk about that a little bit. So you're talking a bit about the right and wrong ways to create an SVG, or some that are create a smaller file versus a bigger file. How are you making your SVGs? Is it special software that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I'm old school and I still love Adobe Illustrator.
Yeah.
That's my go-to. And, you know, like talking about what SVGs were before 2010, to me, it was just a file type I never cared about whenever I saved something from Adobe Illustrator, because it's kind of the second option if you save a file. It's not even export option. It's like save as... .ai.svg. I'm like, what? I don't even know what that is, you know? But it's been there forever, just nobody was using it. So I love Adobe Illustrator. I mean, the Sketch is the new hotness, but I like Sketch for different things. But I think I learned how to use the pen tool in Illustrator, which was a feat that I'm not ready to relinquish that power. And I understand Illustrator well. And also, Illustrator, the code that it creates from the SVG is much cleaner than the code that Sketch creates, although both companies are working to improve the code, the SVG code that is exported, because there's a lot of nonsense in it. Actually, in the past year, they've both done a lot, but like I've given a talk a couple times about the basics of SVG, and in that talk, I will open an exact same drawing in Illustrator and in Sketch, and it looks totally different. The code's totally different. And one of the things that you can see in the Sketch version is that there's all these extra nested layers that Sketch will do. And there's the G element in SVG, which I call, it's the div of the SVG. It's like, it just groups, you know, whatever's below it. And so Sketch will have all these Gs, like nested, like G soup. And it'll also have transform, translate, negative. Instead of like properly positioning something, it will just transform it around, which is kind of weird. And also, oh, my favorite thing about Illustrator is if you are in Illustrator and you just copy any shape to your clipboard, so just Command C, and then open a text editor and then paste your clipboard, it will paste the SVG code.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Isn't that magic? And it will also do it in a very neat, tidy way where it will make the edge of your SVG view box and the viewport nice and neat and tidy. So like there's no extra space outside of your drawing.
That's pretty cool, I would have to say.
Yeah, that's my magic trick.
So in terms of once you've created in an Illustrator, and it sounds like Illustrator's code's more compact, and am I assuming correctly that that means those file sizes are a little smaller than maybe what Sketch might put out?
Yes, probably.
And beyond that, you know, picking the exported code that's more compact, what else do you do on a regular basis to kind of optimize your SVG?
Well, because I like to torture myself, I will usually hand optimize an SVG because that's been part of my learning process about them, which is I delete the things that I know aren't necessary. But, and usually I'm working with like smaller icons and logos, so it's not like there's a ton of things going on. But if you don't want to do that, one of the best tools out there is SVGO. I'm not sure if that's how you say it. And it has parameters too that you can set, but it basically will just minify and get rid of all of the junk in SVG. Because really, I mean, Illustrator and Sketch are the ones you hear about the most, but there's other vector programs and they all export. Any vector application that deals with vector files will have a SVG option to save. And they're all going to create nonsense that needs to be deleted and minified. So SVGO is the best.
Yeah, I have to say, just recently, because we've been tweaking Bright Umbrella's website, and I was looking at our like little logos, because our logo is in SVG. And when we were doing performance testing, it was kind of noted that was one of the larger files. And after Googling, I did find SVGO or SVGOMG. I was like, there's different ways they're calling it. And then I plugged it all in there. And it's really interesting and straightforward because it has all these parameters you can check and uncheck. And what it also does too, kind of like when you compress a ping, there's like lossy choices where it actually removes content from the bitmap. You can also do that with the SVG, but they do that by making the math less precise. And what's interesting and what I liked about SVGO was that you can actually zoom in really closely and zoom out to see how that removal of precision actually affects how the logo is being rendered. So, you know, when I was trying to shrink our logo to be as small as possible, you kind of have to balance the precision with how much savings do I have and at what point does the logo become incomprehensible again when you're zooming in as well as you're zooming out. And then you kind of have to decide like, well, this logo will never be blown up at a certain size. So take out as much detail as possible when it's going to be that smaller size, you know, those kind of things. And that's what I really liked about that SVGO tool. It just has so much step-by-step, click this, see what happens, and then you can download it.
Yeah, it's like save for web and Photoshop for SVG. And also too, I mean, SVGO, sometimes there are things that are important that it doesn't know are important, it'll strip out.
Right.
So like being able to preview what it looks like so you know you didn't break it. I think that's the stress about SVG is that you think you're just tweaking something to make it a certain way, but then you just break the whole darn thing.
Right.
So I'd like to talk, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I do think it's interesting the code aspect of SVG, that it's an XML document. And you've mentioned some of the elements and the attributes that are involved. From the context of what we were just talking about in terms of cleaning up what's exported, what are your core elements and then maybe some of the core attributes and then some of the ones that you see often but that are typically unnecessary?
So great question. First and foremost, the SVG element itself has a whole lot of attributes associated with it. Mm-hmm. And especially in Illustrator and Sketch, it will export out way more than you need. The view box is a beautiful mystery for the most part. Now, I mean, it makes sense when you dive into it, but I still will play around with it and get unexpected results. Mm-hmm. So my advice is don't touch the view box unless you know what you're doing and you have a reason to. There's probably no reason for you to touch the view box, but leave the view box. So keep the view box. I also recommend to keep the width and the height decorations because IE and Edge in particular are buggy if they don't know, if they don't have a width and height declared. Mm-hmm. Also, just like with HTML, any attribute that CSS can style is lower in the cascade than CSS. So if this is an inline SVG and I have width and height declared as attributes, I can override that in CSS easily. So I like to keep them there just to have it there to be safe. And then there's namespace, which is XMLNS equals, and then there's a URL that kind of ends in a W3 SVG URL. And I like to keep that basically, it's just a nice to have where it is a way for a computer to understand what type of document this is. Mm-hmm. And most browsers don't necessarily need it, but like my computer won't understand what that file is in preview if it doesn't have that attribute on it. So it can cause weird bugs in older browsers, so I just don't think it's worth removing. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of the only things you need in the SVG element attributes. But there's things like enable background equals new with a whole bunch of numbers that comes up, preserve aspect ratio. These come up in Illustrator, and one of them like only IE10 understands. So, you know, and then another one is just the default anyway. So I think these are things that Illustrator is working to kind of strip out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for SVG, that cleans up things real fast. And then, you know, everything else is like, it's semantic in the way that it's pretty self-explanatory what the elements that are drawing are, you know, rectangle, circle, ellipse, line. But what you see the most is the element, the path. And the path has an attribute D, which means draw. So basically, the attribute D is giving a bunch of coordinates to tell your browser, tell the computer what to draw. And that's what all the letters and numbers inside that D do. And so then that's where JavaScript can go in and manipulate those numbers and make things happen. That's the power.
I mean, it sounds like SVG just has all these amazing aspects to work with. But one of the things that I'm concerned about, especially with a lot of developers trying to implement the new thing, is forgetting about accessibility. Since SVG is literally just XML and text, I mean, how do we make an SVG more accessible? Is there like a way to describe the image clearly via text? And is SVG even read by search engines?
Yes, it is. So SVG has two elements that are specifically for this, and they're very much like HTML. One is a title, just a title element, and that works just like an alt tag basically on an image. So if you hover over it, it'll kind of display that text over time. And then it also has description element, DESC, which would kind of be like the meta description for an HTML document, I would say, kind of be equivalent. So those are things that are good for accessibility. Also, we haven't talked about SVG also can have text. It doesn't have to be just paths. It can also do really cool things with text that maybe not all browsers support. That's another thing to mention too, is that the SVG itself has really good browser support all around, but all the little, just like HTML and CSS, all the little things inside have different levels of support. And one of the ones that is kind of buggy is text inside SVGs. I mean, just rendering regular copy inside SVG is fine, but there's fancy things you can do like outline text. I mean, Illustrator is basically like anything you can do in Illustrator, you can do inside of an SVG with text, which is really, really cool. So I would also recommend, especially like for graphing, have the text, have the copy inside of your SVG that's describing your graph. Because it's relative to the image that's being displayed.
Right, and that's going to give you, you know, be able to reach your Emacs group. Well, would that be the fallback? Would that actually even work? If it doesn't read SVG, would it read the text in the DES parameter?
No, I mean, again, this is only for an inline SVG. If you're going to use an SVG as an image or as a background image, it would be the exact same accessibility use cases and concerns as if it was a JPEG or a PNG. It's not reading what's inside.
Right. So I want to make sure we do talk about some of the cool stuff you can do with SVGs. You were talking about in the beginning, you just mentioned a slight thing like hover color is something you can do with an icon font, but you can do more with SVGs. So let's talk about some of those things. Can you share some real world examples that you've worked on that you thought were pretty fun?
Yeah, I mean, there is a really good example how you can use SVGs to manipulate them in a responsive way. Is there's a library called Iconic, and it's an icon set that's all SVGs. And one of the features of it is that, and on their homepage, they have a really great example of this, where these responsive icons adjust with the width of the screen. So if the icon is, the example that they show is a microphone. And so when the screen size is big, when the image is big, the icon is really detailed. The microphone is really detailed. There's all these little dots. But as the icon gets smaller, as the window gets smaller, some of the detail goes away so that the font at the, you know, at the smallest size is just very solid and very simple.
I like that.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, I'm playing with the slider right now. It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Okay, and maybe this is just me thinking too much, but I love this, that if you can remove detail as it gets smaller but still convey what you're trying to convey, you have more space for your tap target. You know what I mean? Like you can design the space, but if the icon itself is a little smaller, your tap target can stay the same, so you get even more, like you keep that. I feel like that's one of the challenges I see with some designers is that they design these small little icons and they look great in a mobile device, but you can't tap them very well.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I definitely think that even the fact you can take away detail is just such an important thing when you're a designer, especially because just shrinking a high detail image is not necessarily the best solution when you're trying to translate that image to mobile. If you're just relying on, say, the browser compressing the image, that super large image, especially if it's an icon, you might have unpredictable aliasing, which is the fuzzies, Emily, that you're wondering what that
term
is. Yeah, there could be some weird aliasing happening with that. But if you just actually eliminate detail as it gets smaller so that the image itself just gets simpler, then that kind of fixes that problem.
Yeah, you know, and then another advantage, like the pretty obvious advantage that we haven't talked about for icon fonts versus SVG is multiple colors.
Right.
Like you can't have an icon font in multiple colors. So, you know, an SVG, you can have as many colors in that icon as you want.
So you can remove detail, you can have multiple colors, you still get the ability to change colors via CSS. What are some, I mean, have you done anything in terms of animations, or have you actually worked with like a chart or a, like a bar graph implementation yourself?
Yeah, I've done a little bit of kind of on the side exploration on that, but nothing. I'll mention a few people who do really incredible things because you just look at it. And it's not stuff that is probably like plausible for client projects, but it's just amazing stuff with SVGs. But what I've done is I did it was kind of a hack project at ThoughtBot where, do you know what a PGP key is? It's like this way to sign your emails or digital documents with a way that verifies who you are. So let's say Edward Snowden, when he was sending very private, big information.
Right.
And he could sign his emails to whomever this way, and then they would be confident that they were actually receiving it from this person and likewise him back. So at ThoughtBot, people are really into this, but there's this whole web of trust where, you know, if me and George are connected and he's connected to Tio, but then that means we can trust each other. So it kind of creates, like, you can kind of start to see it in your head, these connections with people and who has a lot of connections. So for a side project, a hack project, we decided to try and visualize that. Mm-hmm. And so we use the library D3, which creates SVG graphs from data. We made this project. I decided to make it look like a universe and make it look like a galaxy. So I picked up colors from like NASA photos and all the little people look like kind of stars and planets. And then there's these lines that connect them that are different colors based on their level of trust and connection to each other. Mm. And it created this beautiful image graph that actually like is informative and has some information. And all it really was some developers plugged in some numbers. This was already D3. If you go to the D3 website, they already show a bunch of examples of graphs and then just kind of went and picked up the code. And it was enough for a day and a half hackathon to like get something kind of up. So that was really fun and really exciting to see that so easily and quickly visualized. But again, this was kind of like just a small subset of data. Mm-hmm. Like we thought about it, we're like, wow, if this was really the whole world of PGP keys, this would probably break the browser. Like the SVG would be like so enormous, you know? Kind of have to think about that if we ever take this further.
Do you think that's the... I mean, I think obviously SVGs present a solution for our multi-device world, as well as the ability to manipulate. But do you think it's the use with data that's going to be where SVG is strongest down the road?
I don't think there's really a competitor with it in that regard that I can think of. I mean, there's Canvas, but Canvas is bitmap, correct?
I've never worked with it, so I don't actually know.
I haven't really worked with it either, but I think that's its only right now competitor. And there's a lot of energy going into SVG and all the things that have been worked on that they're trying to improve on and that browsers are working on are, you know, there's a reason why it's pretty standard now, you know, over the past couple of years that there's great use for it because the browsers understood that there's great use for it. And those bugs get higher priorities and get worked on. Like there's still some bugs in SVG. Like one of the main annoying bugs with SVG is with using CSS transforms to animate elements inside of an SVG is it doesn't work in any IE browser, which is super annoying. And there's also, so SVG itself had its own animation language called Smile, S-M-I-L. But Chrome has deprecated it, which has basically killed it.
You know?
But so right now, IE and Edge understand that. So that's kind of the, I would say, the biggest kind of buggy part that exists. But compared to a couple years ago, it's getting so much better because I think it's so powerful that people are paying attention to it and browsers and the consortium, everybody's listening to it to make it more because there's so many possibilities with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like we really have a lot to chew on here with SVGs. We definitely just scratched the surface. So for our listeners who want to know more and want to dive into SVGs, what are your top resources for learning?
First, I mentioned that I wanted to talk about a couple of people who are doing amazing things that'll just blow your mind if you look at it. So I'll give them a shout out first. The first is Sarah Drasner. And she's got, just if you look at her code pen, she's an illustrator. So she has these beautiful drawings and animations. And just to see what she does is really inspiring. Chris Gannon also does a lot of cool experimental animations with SVG and has a great code pen. I recommend checking out. So what got me into SVG was at the first CSS conf, Sarah Sweden spoke. I guess this was 2 years ago, or maybe it was the second CSS conf. But anyway, spoke on SVGs, and she just blew the room away. And that's what got me interested in looking into it, because it looked like fun. And so I did the kind of typical thing of, well, not the typical thing, but what they tell you should do is I wanted to try my hand at giving a talk, but I didn't have a topic. So I committed to a talk on a topic I didn't know about, which was SVGs. And then I had to go and learn everything. So my biggest resource was a book called SVG Compressed by Jacob Jenkoff. But it's actually everything that's in the book is online at his website. And it's exhaustive, all the details, all the nitty gritty. So if you really want to get into the core and the code, that was a really great resource. Anything that Sarah Sweden says or writes about, her blog, she's fantastic. CSS Tricks has excellent up-to-the-date information about SVGs and resources. Chris Coyer is super nerdy about SVGs too. And I also think Joni Trethall has this great little pocket guide to SVG, and she does like really great visuals that help make it understandable. I recommend the stuff that she has too. So, and if you really want to play around too, this is where I want to go, because I haven't played as much as I want to with animation. There's Snap SVG is kind of a smaller animation library, JavaScript library that you can use to animate SVGs. And then GreenSock also, it lets you animate SVGs similarly to how we used to animate in Flash. You can tween and you have a timeline, which for complex animations is huge. Instead of trying to work out numbers and do the tweaking, and then this element now is a little bit faster, so now I need to make this one, thing. So to play around, that was super, super fun. I've been wanting to play around with that badly.
Wow. I'm just clicking around a few of the samples that you've just mentioned as you were talking. Definitely, you guys need to check out Sarah Drasner's code pen. It is impressive. Yeah, it's just fun.
She is a good example of like a responsive. It's a machine vector drawing, but when the browser gets smaller, it just completely flips, but the machine still works.
That's neat.
That's very
cool. It's super, super neat.
And it makes little pandas.
Fun, fun. I really enjoyed this episode because there's a lot of fun to be had with SVGs. Like, obviously, there's a lot of practicality. Like, yes, you can make icons. Yes, you can make your logos into SVGs, which is probably 90% of what people will be doing. But all these other extra things are just so fascinating in that it really shows you how far the web has come.
Right?
Yeah, with just native functionality. That's the thing that's blowing my mind a little bit is that, like, oh, I don't need to
have anything installed.
No, that's really cool.
That's so true. And I hope that like the more we explore and have fun, the more it pushes things forward too. And the more that those things can come into our everyday work too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, before we finish up, we've got our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better.
Okay.
Are you ready, Brenda?
Yeah, I almost forgot about this part, but I'm excited.
Question one, morning person or night owl?
Morning person. later in life, I became a morning person. Now I wake up with the sun and I can't help it, so I've just embraced it.
What's one of your guilty pleasures?
Pop music.
Oh, love it.
I take dance classes that are learning the choreography to pop videos.
Oh, love it. What software could you not live without?
I still couldn't live without Photoshop.
All right. What profession other than your own would you like to try?
The only thing I ever wanted to be was a solid gold dancer.
Oh my God.
That's the only thing that came to mind.
Love
it. The only thing else I ever wanted to be.
I loved Andy Gibb so much. I watched that religiously every Saturday night.
So opposite question, what profession would you not like to try?
Oh, I'd be a terrible doctor, not just because of dealing with the medical thing, but they have to talk to people so much.
Mm-hmm.
And be on so all the time, and to do it well, you have to be personable, and they see like 30 patients a day, and I think it would just drain me.
All right, if you could take us to one restaurant in your town, where would we go?
I live in New York City. That's like the most impossible question. Oh my gosh. Okay, first one that comes to mind is The Boil.
The Boil.
It is in the Lower East Side. And they give you seafood in a bag, shellfish in a bag, and they give you a bib, and they give you latex gloves, and it's like a garlic spicy sauce, and it's so messy, and it's I have a garlic hangover the next day.
So I'm flying to New York tonight.
Yes.
If you can meet someone famous, living or dead, who would it be?
I'm trying to get to the like first person in my head. Just Jesus, because curiosity, I want to know.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Flight.
What is your favorite band or musician?
That's also like picking a restaurant in New York City. I have like my top probably three of all time, which would be Erasure, Robbie Williams, and Blur.
Awesome. All right, last question. Pancakes or waffles?
Waffles.
Ooh.
Always.
Firmly decisive. Waffles.
Yeah. I'm so glad. I think waffles are having a moment right now. Pancakes have been more popular and for not enough reason for too long, and waffles are having a moment.
Awesome. So that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us, Brenda.
Thank you again. This was super fun.
So in case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
The easiest place to find me is probably Twitter. I am Brenda Marie NYC. I also have a website which basically just directs you to Twitter, which is brendastorer.com.
Great. This was awesome, Brenda. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks again.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency obsessed with happy clients. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsor. Thank you, Backup Pro.
We'd also like to thank our partners, Arcus Tech and DevOT.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Clickcast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you like this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both. And if you really like this episode, consider donating to the show. Links are in our show notes and on our site.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when we're going to talk about third-party API integration with Soulspace's Mitchell Kimbrough. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leia Alcantara.
And Emily Lewis.
Signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.